First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's a Monday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. Hope everybody's having a good Monday thus far. And I suppose just a couple weeks of disappointment was all Boston could handle. Like, that's a lot for them. I know they have so much success up there in Beantown. And, you know, 2 weeks of the hockey team choking was enough, apparently. And the sports gods said, well, it's time to put you guys back on top. As the Boston Celtics clobber the Philadelphia 76ers in Game 7 yesterday at TD Garden. And they win by a final of 112-88 and are off to the Eastern Conference Finals, where that will begin on Wednesday in Boston against the Miami Heat. We'll have plenty of time to talk more about the Eastern Conference Finals and preview that series. But today, is, as far as I'm concerned, it's about the losers, and that ultimately is the Sixers. And if you listen to the show daily, first off, thank you, but you probably know I grew up in the Philly area, and so the Sixers are my NBA team, and I was definitely riding my high horse a bit on Wednesday morning after Game 5, one in which the Sixers went to Boston, clobbered the Celtics, and had a 3-2 lead with a closeout game in Philly on Thursday night. And we saw what happened in Games 6 and 7, and I think that we obviously had some time to eulogize Game 6 a little bit, knowing that there was still one game to be played, that the Sixers had already won twice in Boston. The Celtics also lost a game to the Atlanta Hawks in the first round at home. And so I felt it was a very winnable game for the Sixers yesterday. And yesterday turned into, I'm not afraid to say it, the most embarrassing moment of Joel Embiid's career. And the Sixers' drought continues. They have not been to the conference finals since 2001. So it will now be at least 23 years in between conference finals appearances for the Sixers. And as far as Embiid is concerned, I don't want to hear about his knee. He looked healthy in Game 5. That's why I was so excited after Game 5. You look at that chase down block he had on Jaylen Brown running the length of the court to swat that thing away. That doesn't seem like a guy that has one bad leg. And Game 6, he was bad and didn't command the ball enough down the stretch. They didn't get it to him, whatever. But Game 7 was a complete no-show from the MVP of the league. And again, if you were a process truster and an Embiid fan, because he is, you know, they call him the process. Like, he is the crown jewel of the process for the Sixers. In the previous postseasons, and I'll run through them briefly, there was always something else that you could point to and say, yeah, maybe he didn't play his best, but. And there was always a but. And again, if for the people that liked Embiid, there was a way to kind of wiggle your way around losing in the second round again. In 2018, it was their first time in the playoffs with Embiid, and the Sixers lost to the Boston Celtics in 5 games. They were kind of just starting to taste the playoffs, and they weren't deep enough. They were playing Ersan Ilyasova, Marco Bellinelli, guys they acquired at the buyout, you know, portion on the calendar after the trade deadline. And they were counting on those guys to play big minutes. So they just probably weren't that good anyway, or at least good enough. Then the year after, you lose to the Raptors on the Kawhi Leonard shot. And, you know, what can you do? I mean, it's bad luck. The ball bounces the Raptors' way and falls in instead of spilling out. You know, you still would have had to go to overtime on their court, but you don't get that opportunity. 2020, the team was really pretty bad, and that was when they lost Jimmy Butler, and so they maxed Tobias Harris, and they went out and paid Al Horford. Both of those investments, particularly the Horford one, proved to be bad. And you also went out and brought in Josh Richardson, which didn't really work out. And so it was just a weird mix around Embiid, and they got clobbered in the first round by the Celtics. And so then Brett Brown gets fired, and you bring in Doc Rivers, and the idea here is that Rivers is going to get you over the hump and do a little bit more than what Brown did. And you also, in that following season, you're able to move off of the Al Horford contract and you move on from Josh Richardson. And it looks like the Sixers, they're the number one seed in the Eastern Conference in 2021. And the biggest choke of them all, in terms of the non-Embiid players, chief among them Ben Simmons, and Glenn Rivers in late-game situation just allowing an inferior opponent, the Atlanta Hawks, in 2021 to beat the Sixers. You know, didn't really hold that one against Embiid. I thought that the organization and the franchise around him just crumbled in big moments. And then last season, they lose to the Miami Heat in the second round, and Embiid had is an unfortunate injury. Pascal Siakam hits him in the face in the first round. He has an orbital bone fracture. He comes back for game three of the series after the Sixers are already down 2-0. He's wearing a mask. They get back in it. They tie the series at 2. Ultimately, they weren't deep enough still. Their bench rotation wasn't good enough. Embiid's playing through the injury. And, Harden, typical no-show in big spots. Okay. It was also the first season with Harden. This year, though, I've talked about it before. It really started to feel different, and Game 5 was, unfortunately for the Sixers, the last example of how it did feel different, ultimately for it to end the same way. And I don't want to hear about Glenn Rivers and James Harden, because it's unfortunate that you expect your second-best player to no-show in big spots, and you expect your coach to not be able to adjust enough. But the reason why I think people, myself included, felt that, you know what, this could be different for the Sixers was because they had the MVP, and Embiid, the idea is the reason he's the MVP is because he's going to rise up through those adverse circumstances of a sidekick in Harden who can fold and a coach in Glenn Rivers that makes a lot of, poor decisions and chokes and with series leads. It's been well documented. But Embiid was supposed to transcend that. And you also had some adequate depth this year where you win a game one. I know Harden was excellent, but you also are able to win a game one on the road without Embiid. And then you're able to win game five when, Embiid was really good, but you had everybody going game five. You probably had seven or eight guys that played big minutes, and each one of them you're like, he played well in game five. So it was all coming together for the Sixers to win this series, which is not something I thought when the series began 2 weeks ago. I thought that Boston was the superior team and that the Celtics would win in five or six. But as the series wore on, I was like, wait a second. The Sixers are more of Boston's equal than I thought. They could really do this. And game five was like, wait a second. I think they're going to do it. And to have that kind of collapse in game six and seven, especially in game seven, where, again, Joel Embiid just no-showed. And that's why I say all those other years I'm talking about, you can look at some other things that happened and say, they didn't have that. They didn't have this. Well, yesterday they didn't have Embiid, and it sucks, that because I love the guy, and he's been through a lot, and the Sixers have been so bad, obviously, with those process years. He personally been through a lot of injuries. He didn't even start playing basketball until he was 15. I think his story is pretty well documented recently with the fact that he won the MVP. They've changed rosters a bunch. I mentioned Simmons, Markelle Fultz. They had J.J. Redick, Jimmy Butler, now James Harden, and who knows if Harden's coming back. Like, they've tried all these different things around him, and ultimately, yesterday, it just fell squarely on him. He was nowhere near good enough, and, to Boston's credit, Jason Tatum very much was, and they won the game, but where was the moment where the MVP in that third quarter when Boston outscores the Sixers 33-10, where was the moment where the MVP just draws a line in the sand and says enough? Because the game was really over at the end of the third quarter. At least if you had just stopped the bleeding a little bit and gone into the fourth down 10-15, you can talk yourself into, one run. One run and we're back in the game. And we may not win the game in the end. Maybe Jason Tatum is just too good yesterday, and you still lose by five or something down the stretch. But it doesn't. You don't just go out in such an embarrassing fashion. And then after the game, here's what really pissed me off. I'll get to the other quote that people are pulling around on Embiid, which I think is a little unfair. But he has the audacity to make a Giannis Antetokounmpo reference. And again, if you've listened to this show, you know I've been very outspoken over the fact that Giannis kind of ran from the choke job that the Bucks had and didn't want to label it as a failure. Here was Embiid after the game yesterday.
You know, keep improving every single year, which I've done. So for me, I just look at it, you know, as a good step. Like someone said, it was not a failure, you know, steps to success. But yeah, you just gotta know.
You know, at a certain point, well, what your step to success is getting over this hurdle of finally getting the franchise who you are the face of to the second round, or excuse me, to the conference finals. And I guess he's saying the step is he finally won the MVP. Like, I guess that meant a lot to him, and I'm not saying it shouldn't, but that's not why you're in this. That's why I always bring up Kawhi Leonard when we talk about the MVPs. I think Kawhi Leonard sleeps just fine at night with zero regular season MVPs because he's been the finals MVP twice. So, I don't know. Maybe the fact that he's got his MVP, if you're looking for a silver lining today, the fact that, okay, fine, you got your MVP, now you can focus on just winning an NBA championship, even though that should have been the focus the whole time. If that's the way his brain was wired, I couldn't disagree more with it, but maybe he'll move on accordingly, and that's that. And we won't be measuring success of a season based on an individual award. I got more to say on this, and we'll carry this over because the Celtics did win. There's also some more NBA coaching news, which I absolutely think will filter down to Doc Rivers with the Sixers. So we'll continue to talk Sixers and Celtics as the Celtics advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. It is a Monday afternoon. John Bellmer, our producer. My name is Greg Frank, First Name Sports, Sports Time Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, continuing to eulogize the season for the Sixers as you can't see me today, but I did wear a black shirt, and there's some symbolism behind that as it is the, you know, do this every year, it feels like, why the Sixers couldn't get out of the second round. And again, I was 6 years old, and I do remember it when they went to the conference finals in 2001. Allen Iverson captivated the whole tri-state area, as we call it, New Jersey, PA, and Delaware. And, you know, it was a magical run that ended in the NBA finals against the Lakers. And, you know, haven't been back that far since. And it was just it talked about it in the open. If you're just joining us, welcome aboard. And we do want to shout out our friends at Total Wine and More before we continue. With so many bottles to choose from, there's always something new to try at Total Wine and More. How about a great Prosecco for under $8 and a French Rose for under $7 with the lowest prices for over 30 years? Find what you love and love what you find only at Total Wine and More. Drink responsibly. Be 21. Well, I was doing a lot of responsible drinking yesterday after the Sixers loss, I'll tell you that. And it's just a sad day for the franchise because it sure felt like, and, you know, there were people brought this up, and, you know, I couldn't help but think, oh, wow, that's some cool symmetry. On May 14th, 2013, the Sixers hired Sam Hinkie, who was the architect of the process, to be the GM. And on May 14th, 2023, exactly 10 years later, there they were in a Game 7 to finally get over this hump of the second round. And, you know, it just didn't happen. And again, listen, good for Jason Tatum, okay? Like, let me not just make this all about the Sixers screwing up, even though I think that's the main takeaway I have. Tatum showed up, and, you know, the way he played, maybe nobody was beating the Celtics yesterday. But it just looked worse when the Sixers completely fold. That was a three-point game at halftime. P.J. Tucker's hitting his corner threes. You're getting enough from the role players yesterday, at least in the first half. They had the lead after the first quarter, the Sixers did. And Tucker finished with 11 points. Tobias Harris had 19. De'Anthony Melton gives you 7 off the bench, like 5 rebounds. Like, you're getting enough from your role guys, but the MVP was so bad. And that's why I just continue to call out Embiid. And as I said in the opening segment, there is no way around it now for Embiid with yesterday's loss. There were other previous playoff exits where you can look at things and say there were a few other things that weren't lining up for the Sixers and Embiid. Yesterday, if Embiid plays well enough, if he can even get close to matching Tatum yesterday, I'm not going to say that they win because, again, Tatum was otherworldly yesterday and he deserves credit for that. But the game damn sure isn't over at the end of the third quarter. And now I do need to get to Glenn Rivers and James Harden. Because it's unfortunate that this is just part of the experience with the two of them. But if over the weekend we find out that Monty Williams gets fired in Phoenix, which is really crazy that Kevin Durant plays all of 19 games for Monty Williams, and Monty Williams is fired. Like, that's nuts. So, if Monty Williams can get fired in Phoenix, if Mike Budenholzer, who, again, they choked against Miami, but won an NBA championship 2 years ago. And John Belmer, I remember you were saying, like, can we believe this? Like,
I didn't think,
like,
it was fair.
Like, the guy won a title 2 years ago.
Yep.
It's not a great look to lose to Miami, but let's cut him some slack. He gets fired. Just previously to Milwaukee winning the title 2 years back, 2 years before that, Milwaukee won in 21 and 19. Toronto wins. Nick Nurse is gone. If all of these other guys can get fired, who have accomplished more in recent years than Glenn Rivers has, then, like, Doc Rivers should be fired. It just is the precedent now that has been set, and he was brought in to do more than what Brett Brown did with the Sixers, and he hasn't, and he's had 3 cracks at it. I would not be surprised if the news, knowing our luck, it will probably happen at like 4:05 Eastern, 3:05 Central, right when we get off the air. That's kind of the way the breaking news cycle has unfolded in our time doing this show together. But we'll see. And like, this is who he is now. I'm sorry, like, your championship in 2008, you can only hold on to that so long when you have Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett in their primes, and now we're 15 years removed from that. The book on Doc Rivers is a choke artist in the playoffs. And I don't even think that's unfair. You know, again, he got his 1 NBA championship. He's done enough since that have not, you know, that has not inspired confidence. Honestly, if he was fired, I'm not entirely sure that another team would hire him. Because he's 61 years old. Is he going to a situation that's more of a rebuild? And if the team wants to contend, all of the available evidence recently suggests that this guy is not going to be able to do enough in the playoffs with the pieces he has in front of him to get that contending team over the hump. Like, if you were, like, Milwaukee just fired Budenholzer, why would they hire Doc Rivers? Like, I don't know. I don't really see a fit for him if he does get fired by the Sixers. Like, maybe this is it for him. And as it pertains to James Harden, he has a player option worth about $35.5 million for 2023-2024. He may opt into it. John Belmer and I were talking show prep. Is he going, whatever new contract he signs, if he opts out, is his salary for next season going to be more than that? It might not. And also, if you're Harden, the main destination that keeps getting brought up, if it's not Philly, is Houston. And that's more because he seemed to really like it in Houston. He liked the strip clubs, and he just seems to, you know, he was in Houston for a decade, and there's enough people in Houston that were rooting for Harden and still like the guy. But all of that sentimentality is still going to be there in a year's time. If Harden looks at this and says, you know what, I can still make a damn good salary on my player option this year. I can opt in, and then next season, depending on how, you know, the season plays out, next summer, Houston will always be on the table for him. It can be one of those last dance, like fade into the sunsets. Hey, this was my favorite city to play in, and this was my favorite, you know, market, and I like the fans, and I like Houston. Like, I'll go finish my career there. But if he thinks he can still win a championship or wants to, I mean, obviously the Sixers are a better chance than the Rockets in 23-24. And as it pertains to Harden and Doc, not exactly a ringing endorsement from James Harden for Doc Rivers. Here's what Harden said about their relationship after the game.
When you got here, you said that one of the reasons you wanted to come, if I'm not mistaken, was Doc. How has your relationship been with Doc, and would you like to see him back?
Our relationship is okay.
All right. So then when we think about the architect of the Sixers at the moment, Daryl Morey, who we know loves James Harden, I sure think if Harden does depart Philadelphia, it won't be because the Sixers don't want to keep him. I think that Morey clearly likes Harden. I mean, the guy just is goo-goo gaga about James Harden. So if he needs to fire Doc Rivers to try and keep James Harden, I think he will do that. And I mean, I'm just done with Doc, honestly. Because while I opened the show and Embiid is the number one reason the Sixers no-showed yesterday, that like it falls on him. But also when the run is that extensive for Boston the way it was in the third quarter, I have to look at the coach and be like, dude, do something. Adjust. Call timeout. Call another timeout. Like, nothing. And I understand that Doc isn't a player. He's not on the court, missing all the shots. But that doesn't make him powerless. So, like I said, I just think that the book is closed on Doc, honestly. I would not want him as my coach. And we'll see if somebody does, but I don't think it should be the Sixers. I think it's definitely time to move on. And it's time for us to move on with the show as we're going to hit the ice and talk with Saad Youssef from The Athletic, covers the Dallas Stars. As there is one game tonight on the ice, Dallas or Seattle, who will be the final conference finalist in the National Hockey League, as three of four of them are already set. We'll talk with Saad on the other side. First Name Sports, Sportsman Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
One final game in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs before the conference finals are set on the ice. And that game takes place tonight in Big D as the Dallas Stars host the Seattle Kraken in Game 7 of their second round series. To talk more about it, we're going to go out to the Progressive guest line and welcome in Saad Youssef. But before we go any further, we want to shout out our friends at Total Wine & More. With so many bottles to choose from, there is always something new to try at Total Wine & More. How about a great Prosecco for under $8 and a French Rose for under $7? With the lowest prices for over 30 years, find what you love and love what you find only at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. Be 21. Saad Youssef, our guest from The Athletic, covers the Dallas Stars. Saad, good to have you aboard. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. So what is going on with Jake Oettinger in this series? That's where I wanted to start.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a couple of things. I think one, the bar was set really high last year against Calgary. So I think that's one thing for, you know, anybody that's watching him, when you have a 954 save percentage over seven games against, you know, that Calgary Flames team last year, that's a very high bar. I think secondly, he's, you know, the defense in front of him this year has really diminished quite a bit. And if you look at especially the last game, game six in Seattle, I think that's a pretty good indication of how much, you know, there's not really too much that Jake could have done before he got pulled after the fourth goal. I think the fourth goal was a bad one. But before that, there's not much he could have done. But he has had a couple of just really bad duds. And I think game three, I've watched every single game he's played in the NHL and many in the AHL. I think game three against Seattle is probably the worst pro game he's ever played as a pro. And So I think, you know, there's a combination of things. I think the defense isn't great. I also think that against Seattle, you don't really get any kind of break. You don't get a time to really recollect or anything like that because they're just so deep in the lineup that they just keep coming at you in waves.
Yeah, and that's also where I wanted to get to next. I mean, Seattle wins the game on Saturday night, and they just blitz the Stars right out of the gate. And as much as we can highlight Ottinger, that looked like a Dallas team that was not ready to play on Saturday night. What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's not like they weren't in that situation before. They were in that situation against Minnesota last round, and they came out really strong in game six on the road, same situation. So it was really surprising to see Dallas look as kind of on their heels as they did. But, you know, again, I think Dallas, one, wasn't as prepared and wasn't as, I guess, strong coming out of the gate. But I also really, you know, after watching Seattle for five games in this series and throughout the season sprinkled a little bit, but really throughout the playoffs, you have to give credit to the Kraken just because it's not like Dallas went back and kind of let Seattle take the game from them. I think Seattle came and took the game from Dallas. So I do give a lot of credit to the Kraken for that as well.
All right. So as we also look forward to tonight, another thing that I've been grappling with during this series was, well, all series and most of the season, I think that most people would tell you Dallas is a better team than Seattle. Yet here we are in a game seven. So how much better are the Stars than the Kraken?
Yeah, I would kind of dispute that. I wouldn't say the Stars are better than the Kraken. I would say they were favored in the series coming against the Kraken. And the reason why those two things are different to me is because I think it's a conversation of chocolate versus vanilla. It's like choose your flavor. I think they're two very different flavors of hockey. I think Dallas is definitely more top heavy. They have the superstars. They have Miro Heiskanen, Roope Hintz, Jake Ottinger, Jason Robertson. They have all these big name guys. But, you know, if you get into a matchup over a seven game series, the Kraken have the better middle and bottom of the lineup than the Dallas Stars do. So I don't think it's necessarily just one for one Dallas is better than Seattle. I think it's that Dallas has a lot more high-end talent than Seattle, but I think the Kraken are deeper. And so that's kind of how I've seen the series play out, where it's a battle of kind of imposing different styles of hockey, and each team is trying to do it, and they've done it at different times.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to that I would counter and say, like, I don't know. I understand that in the playoffs especially, but also hockey's just the kind of sport that if you have the depth, if you have the effort and the intangibles and coaching, like, you can buy into a way that you need to play and be successful. And we've seen that in the past with some of those Barry Trotz, New York Islanders teams, and maybe that's what's going on with Seattle now. But, Saad, I'd rather always have the top-end talent because I know on any given game, Jake Ottinger can steal me a game. Miro Heiskanen can play 30 minutes on the blue line. You know, Joe Pavelski could have four goals. It just feels like there's more paths to success for the Stars. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely think you'd rather have the top-end talent. Now, I will also say that one of the biggest pieces of that top-end talent, Jason Robertson, has really been MIA all playoffs for the Stars. And so I think that really hurts the Stars. I think Jake Ottinger has been pretty average, or maybe a little bit better, but pretty average. And so when you do have high-end talent, that's great, but then your high-end talent has to always play that way. And I think Joe Pavelski has, and I think Miro Heiskanen has, but Jason Robertson definitely has not, and Jake Ottinger has only had his moments. And so when you do become overly reliant on those guys, you know, it's kind of the argument that we've had for the last, I guess, you know, 5-6 years with Edmonton, right? I mean,
sure.
Would you rather have Connor McDavid on your team or not? I mean, obviously everyone would, but you also want to make sure that you have pieces around him so that, you know, whenever a team does figure out how to neutralize that top-end talent, which, by the way, I thought Seattle did a really good job in game six of two things. One, they did a good job of containing Roope Hintz. And secondly, this goes to show kind of why Dave Hakstol is, you know, up for the Jack Adams. And sure. Game five, Seattle was basically taking all the shots from the perimeter. They couldn't get in front of Jake Oettinger. And then suddenly in game six, everything was happening in the slot. Everything was happening in the crease. And I think that was a really good adjustment by the Kraken.
Okay, so simply put, you know, I understand that you mentioned that Calgary series last year and Dallas was a considerable underdog in that series going in and got to a game seven. How much pressure is on the Stars to win tonight?
Oh, they definitely have the pressure. I mean, you know, for them to be at home, for them to be, quote-unquote, as you mentioned, the better team, definitely the favorite team. The other thing is that Dallas is fully healthy. I mean, they have every single player available to them. Mm. Nobody's on LTIR. Nobody's on IR. Every single player is available. So when you talk about pressure, being at home, being the favorite team, being healthy, all the pressure is on Dallas to get this done.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose that you probably looked at this thing and thought, well, you know, if they're playing Colorado, that's one thing. But if you told me at the beginning of the playoffs that Dallas was going to have to play Minnesota and Seattle, a pair of teams that they would have home ice advantage against, you would expect them to be in the conference finals. And, you know, much beyond that, I mean, Vegas certainly looks really good. But I have to think that all along, the expectation was, well, they're kind of close to Colorado anyway this year. And now the path to the conference finals didn't even include the Avalanche.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, for myself, as somebody that's watched the Stars, I picked them to beat the Wild. I picked them to beat the Kraken in six. That obviously didn't happen. So I think, you know, you're right. I think when you look at having home ice, when you look at the talent, all that stuff that kind of goes into it, I think Dallas doesn't really have an excuse to you know, come up short here. Mm. If they do, it will be on them.
Saad, last one for you. To that end, you've been around the team all year, like you said. Tell us a little bit about that locker room, and is it the type of group that will embrace these kinds of moments and rise to the occasion, or might they whittle up and fold tonight?
I think they are a group that will rise to the occasion, and for two reasons. I think, one, you know, they have the experience of playing Game 7 last year in Calgary. So even all these younger players that don't have a whole lot of experience, I'm talking about the Jake Oettingers, the Jason Robertsons of the world, they have that experience. And then their youngest guy, Wyatt Johnston, seems to be unfazed by pretty much anything this year. So I think when you talk about the younger guys, they have that experience. And then you have the older guys who have all been there, Jamie Benn, Joe Pavelski, Ryan Suter, Tyler Seguin. They've all been there. And then the other thing is, and the second thing for me is, this team has really taken the personality of their head coach. And Pete DeBoer, he's 6-0 in game sevens in his career. He's a very calm demeanor guy. And so I feel like they will, I think the bigger concern is not that they wilt and lose to the pressure. To me, if you are concerned about the Stars in any way, it's that they take it too easy and are too relaxed coming in, as opposed to, you know, not having urgency enough.
That's a good point. All right, there he is. Saad Youssef from The Athletic covers the Dallas Stars, joining us to talk Game 7 Dallas and Seattle as the final conference finalist will be determined tonight in the National Hockey League. Saad, thank you for your time. Enjoy the game tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay. We will take a timeout and we'll come back. We will certainly circle back to the ice, but the Los Angeles Lakers were very impressive over the weekend in advancing to the Western Conference Finals on the hardwood as the Lakers eliminate the Golden State Warriors. We'll get into that on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
This is Brett Musburger from VSiN, and you're listening to First Name Sports. Now back to Greg Frank on Sports Map Radio.
All right, we are back on a Monday afternoon as we roll on. I see this. Was this intentional with the Lakers segment? There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, John Belmer, our producer on the other side of the glass, says the Los Angeles Lakers, the purple and gold, will play for the Western Conference Championship against the Denver Nuggets. Game one tomorrow night. As that will begin in Denver, a place that the Nuggets have not lost yet in the playoffs. They are 6-0 at Ball Arena. And so the Lakers are going to have to change that if they are going to advance to the NBA Finals. You know, Belmer, let me ask you this before we get to the Lakers eliminating the Warriors. I do not subscribe to league's rig theory. You know, like this is scripted. You know, I talked about it last week with the NHL draft lottery, and I'm sure if San Antonio wins the way Banyama sweepstakes tomorrow night, yeah, everybody's going to be saying the NBA lottery is rigged. I don't like that. I like to think that administrators, officials, commissioners of any sports league are going to uphold, you know, like an integrity standard here. But there was a lot of stuff leaking before yesterday's game with the Sixers and the Celtics about Scott Foster's reffing crew, and he's known as the extender, and you know, for whatever reason, he wants to, you know, Adam Silver wants him to have some kind of an agenda, and you know, James Harden has struggled in Scott Foster games. It's not quite as well documented as Chris Paul, but there's that. There was another official on the crew yesterday, Eric Lewis, who had family ties to the Boston area.
Celtics, yeah.
Yeah, so you saw that. And as it pertains to this segment, as we're talking Lakers, like the first thing I thought of was, oh, the league is just like greasing the wheels here for a Celtics-Lakers finals, and you know, historic teams, LeBron in that Celtics-Lakers finals for the first time. And I see you smiling because it's like, I want to think that that doesn't happen. But it does feel like in the NBA, more than the other pro leagues, we hear things like this. Woj had a tweet yesterday about, I couldn't believe that, I guess Daryl Morey maybe gave it to him or somebody within the Sixers organization, where it's like, the calls that were wrong, like 13 of them went against the Sixers and only 4 in game 6 went against the Celtics. So like a lot of the bad calls were favoring Boston. I really don't want to believe that this is all like scripted and like, oh, but of course the league wants this Lakers Celtics finals, right?
Yeah, of course they want that. I mean, that's going to be epic if they get that. I'd like to think it's not too. You know, I like to think it's all up on the up and up. It's all fair. It's all, but there are a lot of, you know, side stories and you know, little pieces of evidence that point to, okay, maybe it's not, and that's in a bunch of different leagues. And I'm the guy that subscribes to, like, sports are supposed to be, you know, they're not rigged. They're supposed to be fair. It's the competition, the spirit of competition. But then stuff just happens, and you're like, you know.
So, but doesn't it feel like there's more of these, I guess, conspiracies or hypotheticals in the NBA than the other pro leagues?
Well, yeah, and then you've also had referees in the past go to jail for, you know,
gambling. Yeah,
you know?
Tim Donahue, yeah.
There are a lot in the NBA, and especially with Scott Foster and the ref that was linked to Boston,
Eric Lewis,
specifically,
yeah.
Eric Lewis. That I thought that was fascinating, seeing his family picture in all Boston,
right. And,
you know, garb.
Like I said, the Sixers sucked yesterday,
yeah.
And that's the big thing. But I just feel like it's a piece of the puzzle here, and we'll see if it continues. I mean, listen, maybe Miami is just outclassed by Boston, and that one's not that close. But certainly I have to think, if the Lakers win against the Nuggets, are the Lakers just going to boat race the Nuggets? Like, this is, if they win, it's going to be close. And I'm just saying, like, I hate to be that guy, but it just feels like there's a lot of evidence that suggests that something goes on.
Yeah, there's tons of it that points to something.
Yeah.
But we don't, I mean, I'm going to stay, you know, on the backside of that and say I'm still going to lean towards everything's on the up and up. But you can't ignore this.
That's kind of my point. Like, I don't want to come across as playing both sides of the fence.
Yeah, but you have to.
But I feel like if you don't acknowledge the other side of the fence, you're not painting the full picture.
Exactly.
You know, so anyway, listen, good on the Lakers. They outplayed the Warriors, and by the end of the series, there wasn't any doubt who the better team was. And, you know, that's now 2 series in a row where the Lakers, I think, were probably a slight underdog in both to Memphis and Golden State. But by the end of it, it was like, yeah, they deserve to win. They outplayed their opponents, and Anthony Davis was excellent. He had 20 rebounds on Friday night to close the series out. And that's the Anthony Davis that the Lakers were always going to need against the Warriors, because we've talked about it before, how the Warriors kind of designed their team in a way where, and it obviously worked, they won 4 titles, positionless basketball, there aren't many traditional big men at all who, you know, are you really afraid of the Rudy Goberts of the league? And so you can kind of, you don't need a 7-footer unless it's a unicorn like Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis, those kinds of players. And Anthony Davis was one of a few guys that could legitimately expose the fact that the Warriors don't have ample size to garner an adequate defender for what he does. And so the Lakers won because he showed up. Good on him. But I also did find myself wondering, why was it that the Warriors, like, what happened in the last 12 months where Golden State kind of became a slightly above average basketball team, where they were good enough to be in the playoffs, but most of that first round, they were playing from behind against the Sacramento Kings, and they had to go 7 games, and then they're playing from behind against the Lakers, lost the first game, were down 3-1 after 4, and this time they weren't able to get back and win the series. So what happened? Because the roster's not that much different from the team that won the NBA championship last year. Here was Steve Kerr just talking about how, yeah, this team kind of maxed out.
To be fair, I think this team probably, ultimately maxed out. I think, we were barely in the playoff picture for most of the year. So to make that push, to get there, to win an epic first round series, and then, to give the Lakers, a fight in this series and have our chances, that puts us in the top, among the top, 8 teams in the league. That's probably where we should be. This is not a championship team. If we were, we'd be moving on. So you can look at the year in total and see all the ups and downs, and there was all kinds of stuff that went on and adversity that hit, but our group stayed together and competed till the end and made a pretty good run.
I think I mostly agree that they had a lot of ups and downs. Not that I watched every game in the regular season, but you looked at the standings each night, fifth, sixth, maybe fourth. It was kind of a cluster in the West after Denver, really. Memphis was second. We saw them lose in the first round. We saw the 3-seed Sacramento lose in the second round, in the first round as well. So, but yet Golden State never really made a surge to, stand out amongst that cluster of, I don't really know, in the West. Which was why I also think, by the way, if you tracked the standings, you didn't have to watch the games, but you always kind of felt like, and it ended up being the Lakers that took advantage of it, there was going to be some room for somebody to make a run. Because you didn't really feel that great about the top of the West. And, third through eighth wasn't separated by a whole lot. So if somebody could get hot and play its best basketball at the perfect time of year, they could make a run. That's what the Lakers have done. Again, they deserve credit for that. But I just find myself wondering what happened here with the Warriors. Because I don't think we'll see what kind of money Draymond Green gets in the offseason, provided he opts out. I don't think we're doubting the value of their players. Like, I don't think we're saying that these guys are that much worse than they were a year ago when they won the title. But their record wasn't as good enough. Their seed suffered as a result. And yet, having said that, they still had home court in this series and were playing catch-up the whole way and never caught up. So Kerr's right. This wasn't a championship team. But I'm not really sure how we got here. And I do wonder a little bit about what's next. Maybe Draymond Green wants to be a Warrior for life and, they'll keep the core mostly intact. Maybe Jordan Poole gets better next year. I don't know. But it just felt like something was missing for Golden State, and I can't quite put my finger on what it was. Lakers, on the other hand, they're gelling and coming together at the perfect time, but this is a much bigger test now against the Denver Nuggets, and we'll talk more about it tomorrow as we preview the Western Conference Finals. Let's go back to the ice and talk a little bit about some of the hockey from the weekend. That's coming up on the other side. First Name Sports, Sportsman Radio.